Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Tom.
Hi, I'm Stephanie.
It's another wonderful day to talk about literature, and today we're going to be talking about a work of classic literature. I would say this is a book that appeals more to the ladies than the guys. Guys would probably want to read something like The Swiss Family Robinson or Moby Dick or something like that.
With a lot of action, yeah.
Yep, lots of action and blood and guts and all that kind of stuff. But today we're talking about love and romance and lost opportunities and relationships and misunderstandings and stuff like that. The featured book for today is Jane Eyre, written by one of the Bronte sisters. I kind of get them mixed up. Which Bronte sister wrote this one?
This is, I think, Charlotte Bronte. Yeah.
Charlotte Bronte.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is the featured novel this week, The Heir of the Tiger in Victorian England. Let's talk about this article after we listen to it first. So here we go. Here's today's lesson read one time.
Jane Eyre is an orphan brought up in England during the Victorian era. She's sent to stay with her cruel aunt, who quickly decides to transfer her to Lowood Boarding School. Jane has trouble adapting to her new surroundings, since the school's headmaster, Mr. Brocklehurst, is an abusive hypocrite. Although he instills the idea in his students that poverty is pleasing to God, he secretly uses the school's money to make himself rich. After an outbreak of typhus, Mr. Brocklehurst is forced to leave when the school officials discover the horrifying living conditions at the school. After graduating from Lowood, Jane becomes a tutor at Thornfield Manor, where she falls madly in love with Rochester, her employer. One day, he unexpectedly proposes to her, and she agrees to marry him. Yet, on their wedding day, Jane's life falls apart as she finds out that Rochester already has a wife named Bertha Mason. Devastated by the news, Jane flees and becomes homeless. Fortunately, she encounters some unexpected good news. A missionary named St. John takes her in, telling her that her uncle left her a large fortune in his will. St. John also informs her that she's his cousin and asks her to marry him. After considering his proposal, Jane turns him down because she still loves Rochester. One day, Jane believes that she hears Rochester calling her name. She rushes back to Thornfield, only to find the ruins of the manor. She later learns that it was Bertha who set fire to the manor and that she died in the blaze. Even though Rochester lost his eyesight and one of his hands, Jane decides to give their relationship another try, and they get married. 2 years later, Rochester gains his vision back in one eye, just in time to witness the birth of their first son.
The time now has come, everybody, to discuss the contents of today's lesson. Now, if we're talking about Victorian England, we're talking about a period of history in England, which was during the reign of Queen Victoria. She was Queen of England from, let's see, 1819 or so until 1901. So most of the 19th century or the 1800s in England was during her reign. And, of course, we have different sorts of features about the Victorian era in England, and that's when our featured story took place.
Yeah.
Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre, the main person in this novel, is an orphan brought up in England during the Victorian era, as I just explained. An orphan, of course, is a person whose parents have died. Or maybe the person doesn't know where they are or something. I don't know. But basically, they have no parents and they have to be adopted by a foster family or live in an orphanage or something like that. And here we have the term to bring up. That means she was basically raised in England. She grew from a child to an adult during the Victorian era.
Yeah, it's interesting. This verb phrase needs a preposition, brought up, bring up. But if you use the verb raise, you don't need a preposition. You can just use raise. They're both the same. And I don't even think one is more gougy than the other. I think they're both pretty much the same. So bring up or raise. You raise a child. You bring up a child. So she lived back during the Victorian era, which is kind of cool. You might check the internet and see kind of what the fashions look like back then, ladies. So she's sent to stay with her cruel aunt. Someone's cruel. They're very mean. She's probably abused. Maybe they'd say awful things to her. She doesn't get enough food to eat, or maybe she gets spanked or hit because she's not obeying fast enough. But her aunt's not a loving, kind aunt that you would hope she would have. Well, she quickly decides to transfer to what's called a boarding school, the Lowood Boarding School. We have some boarding schools here in Taiwan. Huaxing Zhongqing, which is on a top of a mountain, it's a boarding school.
I wouldn't know. I've never been there.
I supped there one time.
Okay.
And a boarding school is not just a school where you study. You actually live there. So you have a dorm. A dormitory is a place where students stay and live. So they sleep overnight there, they leave home, and they spend all of their time at the school.
Exactly. So that's where she was transferred by her cruel aunt. You're going to Lowood Boarding School, and Jane has trouble adapting to her new surroundings.
Yeah.
Since, or because, the schoolmaster, Mr. Brocklehurst, is an abusive hypocrite. Boy, that's the worst kind of person in the world, an abusive hypocrite. So again, she's transferred there, but if you adapt to some place, you basically get used to it. So she has trouble getting used to her new surroundings. Surroundings just refers to all the things that are around you, not just the buildings and the rivers and the trees and stuff, but also the circumstances, the kind of people who are there, maybe the weather conditions, the leadership, the teaching staff, all that stuff has to do with your surroundings. And she has trouble mainly because of this nasty guy, Mr. Brocklehurst. He's very abusive, which means he likes to abuse people. Maybe he calls them names or even beats them or punishes them and stuff like that. Maybe you've known an abusive teacher in the past or an abusive police officer in your neighborhood. Who knows? And a hypocrite is somebody, basically, who does the things that they tell you not to do. There's somebody who has certain morals about things, but they break those rules themselves all the time. If they tell you to, oh, you shouldn't smoke, it's bad for you, but then you see them smoking cigarettes behind the school, then they are a hypocrite.
Yeah. They want you to do what they're not willing to do, but they act like they're doing all the right things. Well, it says here that although he instills the idea in his students that poverty is pleasing to God, he secretly uses the school's money to make himself rich. He's a bad guy. If you instill something in somebody, it just means you really plant ideas in them that stick for a long time. For example, our parents are probably trying to instill in us a good work ethic. They want you to work hard so you'll be successful. Or they might instill in you characteristics like being honest. You want to be honest, so they try to teach you again and again to do something or be honest. Well, he instills the idea in his students that, being poor is really pleasing to God. That makes him happy, which is crazy, while he secretly is stealing the school's money and is not using the school's money to make life there for the students a little bit better.
Right. So I guess he's saying that, yes, if you're poor, that's good. If you want to be a good Christian, I guess it makes you close to the land or something. Who knows what he was thinking. But while he's saying that, he uses the school's money to make himself rich. Maybe he's got his hands in the till, which means he's stealing money from the cash register.
Or hands in the cookie jar.
Yeah, or he's taking kickbacks from people or taking bribes. If maybe some of the students want to get better grades, the parents offer him a little bit of money on the side.
Yeah.
He says, well, hush, hush, I won't say anything. Just slip, a 1,000-pound note in my back pocket.
Terrible.
And they can have a good grade. So, yeah, he's a hypocrite, but he instills the idea that poverty is good. But he's a hypocrite because he steals the school money. And after an outbreak of typhus, Mr. Brocklehurst is forced to leave when the school officials discover the horrifying living conditions at the school. So here we have an outbreak of typhus. This happened a lot in the past. We still have outbreaks of various diseases.
Yeah.
The Zika virus in Brazil was
SARS.
Kind of an outbreak. SARS. Yeah. What was that one in Africa last year?
Ebola.
There you go. Yeah,
scary.
I can't remember. Those are all examples of outbreaks. When there's a sudden appearance of some kind of disease In this particular case, it's typhus, which oftentimes happens during war, periods of famine, and it's carried by bugs. It's got all sorts of symptoms, a headache and rashes and stuff like that. I wish I knew how to say this in Chinese because it would probably make it clearer to you.
I don't think we have typhus anymore.
Yeah, it's a disease that we don't really
see
that much.
Yeah, because we get vaccinated now against typhus, but it was a big killer back in the day. Well, Mr. Brocklehurst is forced to leave when the school officials discover the horrifying living conditions at the school. So after they have an outbreak of typhus, of course, there are people that come to the school to make sure the kids are okay, and that's when they discover Mr. Brocklehurst has been stealing money. And he hasn't been using the money to take care of the students. So if you're living in horrifying conditions, it's probably very dirty, very unsanitary, so there are probably a lot of bugs there, and the kids are getting sick and maybe not doing so well. That's probably why they had an outbreak of typhus, because it was so dirty. If something's horrifying, it's so awful, it's scary, okay? So horrifying comes from that word horror. A horror film is a film where there are a lot of people killed and there's lots of blood and guts. So it was a pretty awful place where she was having to live at this boarding school.
That does sound very horrifying. You could also say these are deplorable conditions, awful conditions, disgusting living conditions.
Yeah.
And there are germs everywhere. And, of course, they needed to do something about that. So they fired him. They gave him his walking papers. And hopefully the conditions at the school improved after that. Well, everybody, we've come to the midpoint in today's lesson. We're going to stop now and take a break. But please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
大家好，欢迎收听 English Digest， 我是 Sunny。今天我们要阅读 Unit 14 文学单元的第一天课程 The Heir of the Tiger in Victorian England。 今天的课程介绍一本非常经典的小说《简爱》，这本小说也曾经很多次被改编成电影。文章的第一段就提到，小说的女主角简爱是在英国维多利亚时期被抚养长大的一名孤儿。我们看到这一段的第二句 She's sent to stay with her cruel aunt, who quickly decides to transfer her to Lowood boarding school. 她被送至与她狠心的舅妈同住，她的舅妈很快的就决定将她转至罗伍德寄宿学校。动词transfer 有调动转移的意思， transfer A to B 就是指把 A 调到或转移到 B， 例如 The boss transferred Julie from marketing to sales， 老板将朱莉从行销部调到销售部。另外 transfer 也可以当作名词，像是 transfer student 就是指转学生， A transfer of power或是 a transfer of ownership， 就是指权力的转移或是所有权的转移。小说中提到简爱在寄宿学校过着艰苦的生活。我们看到第一段的第三句， Jane has trouble adapting to her new surroundings since the school's headmaster, Mr. Brocklehurst, is an abusive hypocrite. 由于这间学校的校长布洛克赫斯特先生是个施虐的伪君子，简爱对他的新环境适应困难。这里有一个句型 have trouble 加上 ving， 或是 have trouble 再加上一个 with 再加名词，就是指做什么事情有麻烦或是难以做什么事情的意思。在这个句型中 trouble 还可以换成 difficulty， 譬如说 have difficulty，或是 have a hard time， 或是 have problems， 后面也都是接 ving 或是 with 加上名词。例如 The transfer student had difficulty adapting to our English teacher's teaching methods， 这位转学生难以适应我们英文老师的教学方法。如果我们要表示做什么事情很愉快，则可以用 have fun 或是Have a good time， 再加上 ving， 或是加 with， 加名词。例如 ，At a class reunion， everyone had a good time chatting about their time in senior high school。在同学会上，每个人聊到高中生活都聊得很愉快。
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, guys. We're talking today about the classic novel Jane Eyre. Oh, it was written a long time ago, but it's such a classic that most people, at least most of the girls in the Western part of the world, have read this book. It's known to be very romantic. It's been made into a film several times. The last time it was made into a film, at least the one I can remember, Rochester, the handsome lead, was a former James Bond.
Ooh.
So he was pretty handsome.
Yes, indeed. This has been made into a movie many times. I remember seeing this as a film when we were taking a course on Jane Eyre back in eighth grade.
Literature, yeah.
But I don't think we read the actual novel. We read like a shortened version of it or something.
Oh, that's too bad. It's really good.
I'm sure, yeah, reading the real thing would be much better.
Yeah.
But in any case, let's continue with our story. It says here, after graduating from Lowood, Jane becomes a tutor at Thornfield Manor. Okay, that's someplace else. A tutor, of course, is somebody who teaches somebody, usually one-on-one. If you're not doing so well in mathematics at school or something, you might hire a tutor to teach you one-on-one after class somewhere.
Yeah, and typically a tutor would come to your house. So if you go to a bushy bond, that's not quite a tutor. You're in a class there. But a tutor is a one-on-one situation, like Tom said, and they come to your house. She actually lived at this Thornfield Manor. When you hear this word or see this word manor, you need to imagine in your head a beautiful home. They have a lot of land. They're wealthy if you have a manor. So she was in a pretty rich place, and her employer's name was Rochester, which is the name of a city that I lived in for 3 years, Rochester, New York. And she falls in love with him, but she doesn't just fall in love with him. She falls madly in love with him. If you fall madly in love, it's almost like your whole life is wrapped up in your love for this guy. And you can't even think straight. You're so in love.
Exactly. And he turns out to be her employer. That just figures she falls in love with the richest guy in the place.
Of course.
What's wrong with the gardener or the coach driver or the butler? No, they're not good enough. She has to fall in love with the employer.
But let me tell you, the employer was the best looking guy there. So.
Oh, okay. That,
I understand.
That explains it. Okay. But in any case, yes, she does fall madly in love with him.
Yeah.
And one day, he unexpectedly proposes to her. Mm. So I guess he was kind of smitten with her as well. He had a crush on her.
You couldn't tell, though. He was very, very... He didn't give her any hints that he was in love with her at
very
all.
Very subtle about
yes.
it, or very very hidden about it. Maybe he had to be discreet because he was the employer. But in any case, he proposed to her. So here we have the verb to propose. In this particular case, it means that... someone asks someone else to marry them. Usually it's the guy asking the girl, but sometimes it does occur in reverse, but very rarely. So he proposes to her, and she agrees to marry him. Of course I'll marry you. It was love at first sight. I am madly in love with you. I want to be with you forever and ever.
Yet, on their wedding day, Jane's life falls apart. If your life falls apart, everything bad starts happening, and it's all at once, and it's just a mess. Maybe you lose your job, and then you have to move because your landlord wants to sell your apartment, and your boyfriend dumps you, all these things at the same time. So her life falls apart, and as she finds out, this is the very awful news that you read in the book, that Rochester already has a wife named Bertha Mason. Now, our plot summary doesn't mention this, but I will mention it. Bertha is actually insane, and so she lives in the attic of the house, and she's never seen So, you know, and back then they really couldn't divorce, so he stuck with this crazy woman.
Well, I wonder why. She's crazy, she's bonkers, she's lost all her marbles, she's completely off her rocker,
yes.
And she's not dealing with a full deck. So, indeed, he already has this crazy woman wife by the name of Bertha Mason, and devastated by the news, Jane flees and becomes homeless. That sounds kind of hysterical to me. She could have composed herself a little bit and calmed down. Why would you want to...
That's a big deal, Tom.
I guess so, but still, she could have controlled her emotions a little more.
Stop it.
Otherwise, she reinforces the stereotype that women are all hysterical and stuff. But
right.
In any case, she was devastated by the news. If you're devastated, that means you're kind of destroyed by it. It really affects you emotionally, and you don't quite know what to do. It could also be physical, too, like sometimes the cities are devastated by earthquakes or tsunamis or earthquakes or typhoons or whatever to be devastated. I guess you could just say destroyed.
Right. So fortunately, though, she encounters some unexpected good news. If you encounter someone, it means you run into them without having planned to meet them in advance. It just kind of happens. And she has some good news here. So we're using encounter to talk about running into some good news or discovering some great news. A missionary, that's someone who goes out and preaches the gospel and talks about Jesus Christ to people. His name is St. John. He takes her in. Remember, she's homeless. He takes her in, which means he gives her a place to stay. And he has great news. He tells her that her uncle, who has passed away, left her a large fortune in his will. Your will is a piece of paper. It's a document where you write down who you want your things to go to after you pass away. So St. John also informs her that she's his cousin and asks her to marry him. So she has another guy who's interested in her, but let's see what she does. What does she do, Tom?
Well, first of all, she gets a ton of money, which is typical again. Yeah. But after considering his proposal, Jane turns him down because she still loves Rochester.
Yeah.
So she thinks about it. Yeah, he's a nice guy and everything, but still, she turns him down.
Uh-huh.
To turn someone down just means to reject their offer or just simply say no. Would you like to go to the movie with me? No. Oh, she turned me down. I wanted to go to the movie with her because she still loves Rochester, even though he's already married to a crazy person. I guess she could have asked him to get a divorce or something
not
like that.
Not back then. Not
back
possible.
Back then, I guess that was not really allowed. And one day, Jane believes that she hears Rochester calling her name. Jane, please come back.
Jane,
I need you.
Jane, it really is like that in the movie.
It really is. Is it really the name, or is she just imagining this?
Jane, no, he really is calling for her.
Okay.
So she rushes back to Thornfield Manor. Remember the beautiful house that Rochester owns, only to find the ruins of the manor. The ruins refer to what's left after something's been destroyed. Here we're talking about a beautiful home that was destroyed by a fire.
Oh, no.
She later learns that it was Bertha, the crazy wife, who set fire to the manor, and she died in the blaze. Blaze here is a word we use to describe a really big fire. There's lots of flames in a blaze. So even though Rochester lost his eyesight and one of his hands in this tragedy, he must have been burned. He tried to rescue his crazy wife from the attic. I just want to say that.
Okay.
So Rochester isn't all bad. He's kind of a good guy, too. But he lost his eyesight, so now he's blind, guys. He can't see, and he only has one hand. But even though this is true, Jane is still in love with him, and she decides to give their relationship another try. And this time, they can get married.
They do, except when they walk down the aisle, she's got to stand on one certain side of him to hold the hand that's good. Otherwise, without the other hand, how could they hold hands and exchange rings and stuff like that? I guess you got to see the movie to see exactly how they did that. But in any case here, 2 years later, Rochester gains his vision back in one eye. So he regains his vision. He gets it back just in time to witness the birth of their first son. Oh, that's so touching. She was pregnant, and she gave birth to their first son, and he was able to see it, although not with any depth perception, because you need two eyes for that. But in any case, at least he got to see some, which is good. And all of you get to listen once again to our article, but, well, actually, we're going to listen to our Chinese teacher, so let's do that right now.
文章的第二段提到简爱从寄宿学校毕业之后，就在一座庄园担任家庭教师，并爱上了庄园的男主人罗彻斯特。就在他们要结婚的时候，简爱发现罗彻斯特已经有妻子了，所以他决定逃离庄园，最后意外遇见了他从未见过面的表哥圣约翰，还继承了舅舅的遗产。我们看到第二段的第二句， One day he unexpectedly proposes to her and she agrees to marry him。 有一天他出乎意料的向他求婚，而他也同意嫁给他。动词 propose 在这里是求婚的意思，名词是 proposal， P-R-O-P-O-S-A-L。 Propose to somebody 就是指向某人求婚。例如， Susan didn't expect Peter would propose to her only 6 months after they met。 苏珊没预料到彼得会在他们只认识6个月后就向他求婚。 Propose 还有另外一个意思，就是提议、建议，后面可以接名词 ving 或是 that 名词子句。要注意的是， propose 如果接 that 名词子句的话， that 子句里面就要用假设语气 should 再加上原形动词， should 在这里就可以省略。例如， The teacher proposed that the student should ask the school counselor about his career choices。老师建议这位学生可以问学校的辅导老师关于他的职业选择。文章的最后一段提到，简爱最后回到了庄园，却发现庄园已经被罗彻斯特的妻子烧毁了，而他的妻子葬身在火海之中，而罗彻斯特也失去了视力。最后，简爱和罗彻斯特结婚了，而罗彻斯特的其中一只眼睛也恢复了视力，正好可以目睹他们第一个儿子的出生。我们看到最后一段的第三句， She rushes back to Thornfield only to find the ruins of the manor。 她赶回桑菲尔德，不料却只发现庄园的残骸。 Only to 再加上原形动词的意思是你做一件事情但结果却令人失望或惊讶，可以解释成结果却怎么样的意思。这个片语的用法是一个完整句子加上逗号，再加上 only to 原形动词。例如， Roy rushed to the meeting only to find it had already ended。 罗伊赶去会议，结果却发现会议已经结束了。以上就是今天的课程，谢谢大家收听。
Okay, everybody, that brings us to the end of our lesson for today. We summarized Jane Eyre today, and in our next lesson, we're going to talk about the actual writer, Charlotte Bronte. So please join us then. From all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Bye.